part two of our sermon today, entitled The Children of the Barren, More Than the Children of the Barren Woman. That's in 1 Timothy, number 39 of Ezekiel Harder. And we're going to continue on our reading. I shall read from the Mount of Blessings, page 201, beginning with the first paragraph. For the way of the transgressors is hard, but wisdom are ways of the pleasantness, and all her paths are peace, every act of the obedient, unto the assure every act of the self-denial, for his sake every trial well endured, every victory gained over the temptation, is a step in the march unto the glory of the final victory. If we take Yeshua for our guide, he will lead us safely. For the road may be rough and the ascent steep. There may be pitfalls upon the right hand and upon the left. We may have to endure toil in our journey, when slavery, when longing for the rest, we may have to toil on. When faith, we may have to fight. When discouraged, we must still hope. Verily, with Yeshua as our guide, we shall not fail of the reaching the desired haven at last. According unto the reading, we ought to pray for the wisdom and for the determination for the walking in the ways of the Yeshua. Only his ways are pleasantness and peace. When we must deny ourselves of something, or when we must endure a trial for the gain of a victory over temptation, we are to hear that these are steps forward, final victory, or toward the final victory. Let's read that again. We must endure, when we must deny ourselves of anything, or anything special, or something, or when we must endure a trial for the gain of a victory over the temptation, we are to feel that these are the steps toward a final victory, and we should see that to live the life of sin is as if it were to live down in the gully, down where we actually find ourselves from the birth up. To get to live on a mountaintop, that's in the kingdom, one must, as it were, climb the steep and rough mountain road. For the climbing of the road may seem hard, but after the last step is made and the peak of the mountain reached, there is joy and comfort, confidence and victory, which no language can describe. For the children of the barren are more than the children of the barren woman. This is actually the title of our number two sermon, and as part two of our sermons for the day. That was Sabbath, May the 3rd, 1947, of Ezekiel Harder. Okay. It says, before we begin our study verse by verse of the Isaiah 54, we shall read verse 1. Isaiah, sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear. Break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with a child. For more are the children of the barrenness than the children of the married wife, saith Yeshua. son of Yahweh. For the two women here brought to view, one is barren and the other is not. For the barren woman is encouraged for the breaking forth into singing, for she is promised to have many more children than the one who is having children. To learn who these women are, let us turn to the fourth chapter of the Galatians. For it is written that Abraham had the two sons, for the one by a bondmaid, and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, the carnal flesh, but he of, no, it's not carnal flesh, take that back off. But he who was born of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman, Sarah, was born by the promise. For those things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants. For the one genders from the Mount Sinai, to which genders unto bondage, which is Agar, Galatians, the bondwoman, the Egyptian woman, Sarah Saban, handmaid, Galatians 4:22-24. For the Apostle Paul reminds us that the Abraham had the two wives and the two sons. We all know the story that when the Yahweh called Abraham for the departing from his country and for the going into an unknown land, Yahweh promised to give him a son. Something like 25 years passed by and still the arrival of a son was not in sight. Sarah was then about 90 years old, Genesis 17:17. During those years of the Abrahams and Sarah's waiting for a son, Hagar became Abraham's wife, and through her Ishmael was born. Sarah, therefore, is a desolate woman put aside, and Hagar is the one who has an husband. According as if it's for one is allegorically speaking of these two women and their children, as to what the allegory is about, the apostle explains. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. For Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all, Galatians 4:25-26. For the Agar symbolizes Jerusalem as a city of the tribe of Judah, the house of David, the Judeans, in other words, the born after the flesh. Let's go back and do it all over again. For the Agar symbolizes Jerusalem as the city of the Hebrew Israelites, 12 tribes of the Israel, as the born after the flesh. Whereas Sarah symbolizes Jerusalem, that is to come as a city of the born again, as the children of the promise. For it is written, rejoice thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry thou that travailest not. I'm not satisfied with what I just read. For the Agar, let's read that again. For the Agar symbolizes Jerusalem as a city of the Jews. for the born after the flesh, whereas Sarah symbolizes the generation that is to come. Okay, the city of the born again. What he's talking about, Hagar represents the Jews up to the cross of the Old Testament, whereas Sarah symbolizes Jerusalem after the cross of the born again apostolic of the Spirit. That is to come, the city of the born again, the children of the promise. For it is written, rejoice, thou barren, that beareth not, break forth and cry, thou that travaileth not, for the desolate has many more children than she which hath an husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of the promise. But as then, he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the Spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the Scripture? Cast out the barren woman and her son, for the son of the barren woman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not the children of the barren woman, but of the free woman, Sarah, Galatians 4:27-31. But the inspiration makes clear that allegorically, Hagar and her son Ishmael represent the church of the Old Testament period, and that Sarah and her son Isaac represent the church in the New Testament period. For the membership of the Old Testament church was indeed of the flesh, for it was made up of whosoever was born on the stock of the Jacob. But the members of the New Testament church, especially the ones here projected, are the persons who have, by the Spirit of the truth, been converted unto the Yeshua, Son of Yahweh. And as it was impossible for the Isaac to have been born by the will of the flesh, just so impossible it is for these children of the Spirit of the truth to be born by the will of men. For the Yahweh, for the Yahshua's reason for the delaying, for the Yahweh is the Father's reason for the delaying and the fulfilling of his promise. Under Sarah, therefore, is very obvious, for he was writing both history and prophecy by the life of Abraham's son, for he caused Ishmael's birth by the land, the birth of the Isaac. Ishmael, therefore, as a type of the Hebrews, the children of the flesh preceded Isaac, a type of the untypical apostolic of the New Testament, the children of the promise. Our greatest interest, however, is to know a time in which Isaiah 54 finds its entire fulfillment and a generation under which this allegorical prophecy especially applies for the knowing of whether it was written especially for the benefit of the early apostolic church, for the church in the Middle Ages, or for the church in our time, since none of the New Testament writers comment except on the first verse of Isaiah 54. Obviously, the chapter was not written especially for the people at that time. Moreover, verse 14 further proves the time in which the prophecy applies. And the righteousness shall thou be established, thou shalt be far from the oppression, for thou shalt not fear, and from the terror, for it shall not come near thee. Isaiah 54:14. For the promise unto this latter section of the apostolic church is that she shall be far from the oppression, be not ruled by other people or by another people. Let's read that again. For the promise unto this latter section of the apostolic church that was going to cause the trouble apostle is that she shall be far from the oppression. Be not ruled by another people. That terror will not come near her, and that she will have no need to fear. In the view of the fact that the purified church hitherto for has never been free, in the view of the fact that the SJA church hitherto for has never been free from any of these logic rules, that she is yet to realize these promises. Hence the generation under which this chapter is addressed, the church that is to receive these promises, is not in the past, but in the future. And V.T. Olive is talking about from 1947 on, in our day. And the fact that inspiration now for the first time unseals these long-concealed promises and now brings them to attention, makes them meet in the due season. That's Matthew 24:42-47. The truth is obvious. The church, after this announcement, has done its work. For the church, after this announcement, has done its work, is soon to emerge into this glorious period of the time. Furthermore, verse 15 says, "Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake." Isaiah 54:15. Okay. Here, she is warned that her enemies will gather together against her, but not by the Yahshua, for they will therefore not prosper, but will fall for her sake. For her enemies will never again be able to carry any of her members into captivity, not into prison, or into the flames of fire, nor into the dens of beasts. She is never again to see the Assyrian or the Chaldeans prosper against her, neither is she any more to suffer the persecution by the Jews and by the Romans. All of these are now in the past, and their reoccurrences will have no effect on her. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and I have created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in the judgment thou shalt condemn. Now this is the heritage of the servants of the Yahweh, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, Isaiah 54:16-17. So far, the weapons that were formed against the SDA church have prospered. And that was a general conference of one of the Seventh-day Adventists, those Jesuits infiltrators that had taken over the leadership of L.N.G. White in 1888-1890 at the General Conference for Seventh-day Advent. But the church here in prophecy is to be protected and being completely in the Yahweh's, Yahshua's hands, son of Yahweh, for everyone that rises against her in the judgment. Now we're in the judgment period now in the 12th parabolic hour. And the judgment of the living, she will condemn. So we have the power and the authority to condemn anybody that rises against us now here in this 12th parabolic hour. She will condemn by the truth and righteousness. Our existence and success and the work of the Yahshua, therefore, is no longer a mystery. Prophecy plainly points out that many are rising against it, but none have and none will ever prosper. For the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, who created the smith and the waster to destroy, is just as well able to create peace and security. For the spirit of prophecy reiterates this. As the saints left the cities and villages, they were pursued by the wicked, who sought to slay them, but the swords that were raised to kill the Yahweh's people broke and fell as powerless as a straw, for the angels of the Yeshua shielded the saints as they cried day and night for the delivered, for their cry came up before the Yeshua. Early writings 2:84-5. But if his people remain separate and distinct from the world as a nation, that through righteousness, Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, will be their defense, and no weapons formed against them shall prosper. Testimony, Volume 5, page 601, Ellen G. White. For the lesson is clear. For the church is emerging from the one period and merging into another. She is at the dawn of a new day. In other words, she's at the dawn. Let's read that again. For the lesson is clear that the Seventh-day Adventist Church is emerging from a fourth period movement, Matthew 20, verse 5, at the ninth hour, 1844, and merging into another movement of Mount Zion at the 12th hour, and that would be in 2002, with the fifth movement. She is at the dawn of a new day, in the 12th period, by which our general living in the harvest time. So we're in the merging into another. She is at the dawn of a new day, for her glory is now to be manifested, her great work finished, and all her children a great multitude saved, rather than her enemies triumphing over her, she is a triumph over them. Since the church as a whole is here represented by both the mother and children, we should know what part of the church is represented by the mother and what part by the children. According to verse 17, the chapter concludes that the servants of the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, those who bring forth converts, constitute the mother, and their converts, the laity, constitute the children. What is meant by her travailing in the birth? For the answer, let us turn unto the Galatians 4:19. My little children, of whom I travail in birth again, until the Yahshua be formed in you, for those for whom the apostle, let's do it again, those for whom the apostle Paul was laboring for the bringing of the Yahshua unto their knowledge. He said he was surveilling in birth for them until the Yahshua be formed in them, until they be fully converted unto him, be born again. Now that we understand the allegory of these two women and of their children, also the time for which Isaiah 54 was written, we shall study the chapter 50 verse by verse, and all of its details as far as the Yahshua permits. Isaiah 54, 2 and 3, enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtain of thine habitation. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes, for thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Let us continue. All these tongues and large stretch, spread out, lengthen, and strengthen means to to do everything possible. Let's read that. Let's read this all over again. Let's read Isaiah 54:2-3. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitation. Spread out, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes, for thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. All these terms, enlarge, stretch, spread out, lengthen, and strengthen, mean to do everything possible to amplify, meet the situation, to amplify, meet the situation. Let's read that again. All these terms, enlarge, stretch, spread out, lengthen, and strengthen, mean to do everything possible to amply meet the situation, for the making the accommodation for a larger number of the converts, to do everything possible now, so that when you break on the right and on the left, when the multitude of the converts begin to pour in, you be not confused and unable to accommodate, do not disappoint the people, and moreover, assure that Yeshua, son of Yahweh, that thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate city to be inhabited. The prophecy therefore brings us to the days of the restitution of all things. Matthew 17:11. Isaiah 54:4. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame, for thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. Yes, she is reassured that she need no longer fear, need not be thrown into the disorder and confusion anymore, that she shall forget her reproach and widowhood. In other words, Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, departing from her. Yes. Isaiah 54:5. For thy maker is thine husband. For the Yahshua of the host is his name.
Yahweh.
Okay. That's Yahweh. So, and thy Redeemer, this is all wrong. Let's read that again. Isaiah 54:5. For thy maker, Yahweh the Father, is thine husband. And, because it's got a comma here, semicolon, meaning it's a conjunction. And the Yahshua of the host, his son, is his name. This is all wrong. It shouldn't read that way. Let's read that again. For thy maker is, Yahweh the Father is thine husband. For the Yahweh is his name. And his son Yahshua is the Redeemer of the Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. For the Yahweh of the whole earth shall he be called. Let's read that again now. For thy maker is thine husband. For the Yahweh is his name, the Father. And his son, as the Holy One of Israel, is thy Redeemer. For the Yahweh, Yeshua, son of Yahweh, for he is Yeshua, King of the whole earth shall he be called, the Son of Yahweh. For our enemies may say anything they wish, but the Yeshua himself testifies that he is our king. As a king that made us. Let's do that again. For our enemies may say everything they wish, but Yahweh the Father himself testifies that he is our Yahweh, the Yahweh that made us, and his Son, Yeshua, the Holy One of Israel, as the Redeemer of his people. That's Yahweh is no, this is all wrong. This is all confusion.
Yeah.
For our enemies, let's read this again. For our enemies may say anything they wish. This is all talking about Yeshua, the Father. And the only way we can make sense really out of this is to read Isaiah 54:5 again. For thy maker, as the co-creator of Adam and Eve and all of mankind, Genesis 1:26, Yahshua is a co-creator with the Father. It says so in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1 through 3, for thy maker, co-creator, Yeshua, is thine husband, for the Yeshua of the host is his name. And he's also thy redeemer as the Holy One of Israel, for the Yeshua, redeemer of Israel, he's the redeemer of the whole earth of the remnant, shall he be called. For our enemies may say anything they wish. Verily, the Yeshua, Son of Yahweh himself, testifies that he is our redeemer, as the Holy One of Israel, as a co-creator that made us, and as the he's the owner of the whole earth. He inherited it. Yahshua the Son of Yahweh inherited all the earth by virtue of his death on the cross. Isaiah 54:67. For the Yahshua has called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in the spirit, and a wife of the youth. When thou wast refused, it says to Yahshua, for a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with the great mercies have I gathered thee. For the statement, for a small moment have I forsaken thee, being set forth in their contrast to the statement that with great mercies will I gather thee, shows that the Yeshua's forsaking her is her dispersion among the Gentiles, and that her getting is her returning unto the homeland, her inhabiting the desert cities. Isaiah 54:8-9, in a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with the everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith Yahshua the Redeemer. By his blood, Revelation 5:9-11, for this is as the waters of the Noah unto me, for I have sworn that the waters of the Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee. that which she has gone through, she will go through no more. As sure a promise as the promise unto Noah, I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. Genesis 9:13. Isaiah 54:10-11. For the mountains shall depart and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my people, or of my peace, be removed. I said to Yeshua that has mercy on thee. O thou afflicted, tossed with the tempest, and not, let's read that again. Isaiah 54:10-11. For the mountains shall depart, and the hills be removed. But my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be renewed, saith Yahshua, son of Yahweh. Hath mercy on thee. O thou afflicted, tossed with the tempest, and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with the fair colors, and lay thy foundation with the sapphire. What else could her stones stand for, if not for her members, the children? And what could her foundation depict, if not her apostles, founders, those whom the Yahshua uses for the work of such a revival and reformation? Such was the privilege of the 12 apostles at the beginning of the apostolic movement. Yahshua is the 12 apostles that he chose to set up the purified kingdom of grace with. Such was the privilege of the 12 apostles at the beginning of the apostolic purified church, recognizing this glorious fact, inspiration wrote on the wall of the city had the 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb, Revelation 21:14. For the statement, I will lay thy foundations with sapphires, we notice that she is now being founded, that the Yahshua is now building from the bottom up. Isaiah 54:12, and I will make the windows of the agate, and thy gates of the carbuncles, and all thy borders of the pleasant stone. If the literal use of the windows is to give light and air, then what could this symbolism? You know, if not her seer, those who bring light and truth to the church of the Yeshua. And if the literal gates are used to keep out the undesirable elements, then in the spiritual realm, they must symbolize their watchmen, their ministry. What a wonderful illustration. What a sanctified group of the people. It vividly projects the stones of the fair colors and the foundations of the sapphires, windows of the agates, gates of the carbuncle, and all of her borders of the pleasant stone. Every soul a jewel. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden waves of the ochre, Isaiah 13:12. For the Zion's sake, says the Yahshua, will I not hold my peace, and for your Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as a brightness, and the salvation thereof is a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Yahshua shall name, for thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahshua, and a royal diadem, for thou also shalt be a crown of glory in the hand of the Father Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of his son Yahshua. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land Judah, for the Yahshua delighteth in thee, and thy land shall be married. Isaiah 62:1-4. Now it is plainly seen that a letter of sinism shall forever pass away, that the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, will have a purified church without the spot, wrinkle, or any such thing. But you cannot afford to be left out of it. You must join the advocates of this church if you are to become a part of this glorious movement. Isaiah 54:13-17, and all thy children shall be taught of the Yahshua, and great shall be the faith of thy children, and righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear and conserve, for it shall not come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake. For behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work. And I have created the waste to destroy. For no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. For this is the heritage of the servants of the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, and the righteousness is of me, saith the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Evidently, we are so to be convinced that the mighty Yahweh of the Jacob is able to protect us. Read again. Evidently, we are so to be convinced that the mighty Yahshua, son of Yahweh, of the Jacob, is able to protect and to keep us from all evil, else he would not be trying time and again to convince us of his ability, by the further explaining that he has created the smith and the waster, and has put them to work, just so he is able to make their instrument and efforts of non-effect. But Yahshua's persuasion, you see, is such that a little child can understand. All these promises are the heritage of the servants of the Yahshua. How can we afford to let them go? Are they not cheap enough? Since the faith and the blood of Yahshua is all they cost, let us therefore believe, and they shall be ours forever. Let's read it again. Since the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, in the New and Living Way, is all they cost, let us therefore believe, and they shall be ours forevermore. We have now learned that Abraham's two wives and two sons are an allegorical forecast of the Old and the New Testament churches, that the Ishmael's arrival prefigured the fleshly Israel of the Old Testament, and that Isaac's arrival prefigured the spiritual Israel of the New Testament. The apostolic believers of the apostolic believers, that Ishmael, first Jew and Isaac, was a forecast of the Jews of the persecuting the tribe of Jews, the Pharisees at the cross, and the Sadducees, and the publicans, all those together persecuting, and the Romans, the soldiers, persecuting the Christians. There's four groups there persecuting the antitypical apostolic congregation. that the Abraham's acts of resisting Harrison and sending Hagar and her son away from home foreshadowed that serious action of putting away and disinheriting, especially Israel, that only those who are born again, born of the Spirit, will inherit the kingdom that Isaac, who came into this world only by the power of the Yeshua, by the power, that's good again. That only those who are born again, born of the Spirit, will inherit the kingdom that the Isaac, who came into this world only by the power of the Yahweh, of the Spirit, foreshadowed the apostolic church, but especially the soon coming kingdom, the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44-45, this is the everlasting kingdom of David, set up a new structure by the God that ran now, that Yahshua has come to sit upon the throne of this David and his kingdom that he himself set up, starting to pass over 2002 from the church. Yahshua, he was there in person. He took the reins in his own hand, and he discharged the slothful servant Brother Johnson, and he established and said for Elijah David as his successor at that time. The soon coming kingdom in which there is to be no Ishmaelite. And the last Ishmaelite that we had in the kingdom was from 1970 to 2003, Gilead Center. Because there were Ishmaelites from 1930 to 1970 in the Rock Movement. There was Ishmaelites from 1844 to 1890 in the Adventist Church in Mount Bashan, the first feeding pastor. There were Ishmaelites during the 40 years in the wilderness, and typically by Taylor G. Bunch from 1890 to 1930. Ishmaelites has been in all the three feeding pastures of the Adventists from 1844 clear up to 2002. But not anymore. And no one can be such as should be saved if he does not believe what the Word said. If he does not take his stand on the true side, only they that hunger for the truth and righteousness will be filled and become his precious jewel, fit to be a part of this Yeshua's jewel building, and they shall be mine, saith the Yeshua of the host. And that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him, then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, and him that serveth him not. Malachi 3:17-18. It is a terrible thing to disbelieve the word of the Yeshua, son of Yahweh, or to be indifferent, indecisive, and inactive. Okay, this brings the end of our stage this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.